On the road or off-road, Chevy Silverado is built for tough performance in any condition. Hit the road in a new Silverado pickup. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for a dealer near you. Chevy Silverado, official truck partner of the Chicago Bears.
Here's a question that we haven't really spent much time on. We're about to, though. Clay Jenkinson is going to join us. He comes on as Thomas Jefferson and Teddy Roosevelt a lot. He's a presidential historian. And as the voice of Jefferson, he's often said in front of shows that we do on stage that the Supreme Court should have term limits. Those were Jefferson's views. I think those are Jenkinson's, too. But let's talk a little bit about what Joe Biden suggested. Should we put the brakes on the Supreme Court a little bit? WGN, John Williams is here, and Clay Jenkinson is on the phone. Hi, Clay. How are you?
Hello, my friend. I'm talking to you from Missoula, Montana today.
I saw some of the pictures that you posted. You're traveling the country pulling an Airstream trailer. In the name of whom again, Clay?
In the name of the great novelist, John Steinbeck, the author of Mice and Men and The Grapes of Wrath. And in 1960, Steinbeck made a journey around the whole country in a camper truck. And that produced a minor classic, his 1962 book, Travels with Charlie.
Did you bring a dog with you?
You know, that's the number one question that anybody asks me. And last night, I was at this fabulous lodge called Locksaw Lodge, west of Missoula, where we do my annual Lewis and Clark retreat. People can find out more about that at Listening to America. But somebody came, a guest, with a magnificent black full-size French poodle, and I wanted it because that would solve so many problems, but I offered them $25, and they were not impressed.
Well, so there you are, traveling across the country. Then you're blogging about and posting videos, and also your podcast series continues. So this is sort of your year, besides all of the traveling that you do, guest lecturing that you do, writing that you do, stage performing that you do. You're taking the year to travel the country, and as you said, listen to America. ListeningToAmerica.org is the place to go for your stuff?
Yes, listeningtoamerica.org or ltamerica.org. And yes, this is a listening tour. As you know, John, the 250th birthday of the country is coming in July 2026. And I'm really trying to get a sense of where we are, why we're so enraged and why we're so polarized and why there's so much anger and frustration in the country. And I'm trying to figure out how deep that goes. Is it just major media exaggerating and distorting the lens, or are we really as broken as a republic as sometimes we seem to be?
But I imagine you in places that are rural or beautiful, national parks and whatnot. Are you going through cities as well? Do you think you're getting a good scope of the country?
Well, that's a really good question, John. I was in Chicago for a couple of days. Of course, that's one of America's three or four greatest cities. I'll be in San Francisco soon, but mostly I'm in the heartland, because when you're hauling a trailer, it's not the smartest thing to be in Houston at rush hour or New York City. I did drive to get to Long Island where I started. I had to drive my 23-foot Airstream over the George Washington Bridge into Manhattan at midday, and it was, I'm not afraid of much, but it was one of the most terrifying drives I've ever made.
And what are you hearing? This isn't why I called today, Clay. In fact, it's weird that I'm even calling you Clay on the radio, because I always talk to you as Thomas Jefferson and on stage often as either Jefferson or Roosevelt. But I am asking you to just, A, set the stage for who you are a little bit here. We'll come back, and then I wanted to know what you, and as you've been informed by Thomas Jefferson, would say about the Supreme Court. But just before we get to that, in general, what are you hearing as you travel and talk to people across the country?
I'm hearing a whole range of things, but mostly I'm hearing a sense of exhaustion that ever since, and I don't mean any particular political opinion about this, but ever since Donald Trump came down the golden escalator in 2015, the country has been sort of stirred up. He's a known disturber and disruptor. And so there's been a lot of chaos, and for the first term, we all followed it sort of breathlessly and kind of amazed at what was happening. I think many people that I meet are just saying enough already. We're a pox on both their houses. Nothing gets done in Washington. We don't need this. You know, we're a better country than this. A lot of people are simply turning away, John. But since President Biden decided not to run for re-election, there is a renewed debate. It's sort of, and I'm really fascinated by this, and I'm gratified, John, that the debate has moved from personalities towards policy. And, of course, that's where the debate should be. What's the best border policy? What's the best tariff policy? What's the best educational policy? What's the best energy policy? And if we can move back to an honest, sometimes unpleasant, but an honest and civil debate about policy, we're going to heal.
Historian, author, bon vivant, Clay Jenkinson is on a phone line. He appears with us each fall in Chicago on stage in character as Thomas Jefferson, as Meriwether Lewis, as Teddy Roosevelt. We're asking you to bring Teddy Roosevelt to the Tivoli Theater in Downers Grove the first Saturday in November this year. You're still up for that, right, Clay?
I can't wait. This is just before the election, of course. And Theodore Roosevelt, as you well know, John, has an opinion about absolutely everything.
I just think that when Roosevelt particularly is on stage, Jefferson doesn't look anything like we would have as a statesman today. Roosevelt kind of does, and you just get the feeling that there's still hope. Okay, well, I'll take one of those. You know, robust, opinionated, but also funny, well-read, a good writer, a good thinker, a fair person.
Yes, two things about that. One could speak forever about Roosevelt, but he was arguably the best read, best prepared president in American history. And that's saying quite a bit if you think of John Adams and John Quincy Adams and Thomas Jefferson. Secondly, Roosevelt was born an aristocrat, but he became a small D Democrat. He was always politically a Republican, but the Republicans were a somewhat different party back then. But he became a small D Democrat, and his basic view was, if this society doesn't work for everyone, it doesn't work. That there has to be a fairness principle. He called it the square deal, and that every American, if they're willing to work hard, if they have self-reliance and gumption, should be able to have modest prosperity in this society. And if that's not happening for able-bodied, willing people, then that society needs reform.
What do you, Clay Jenkinson, think about the Supreme Court and the fact that they serve for life?
Well, you know, Article 3 of the Constitution is very brief. So that's the article about the judiciary. The article about Congress, Article 1, is very extensive. Article 2 about the presidency is quite extensive. Article 3 about the judiciary, not much. But they did say that justices should serve on good behavior, for good behavior. Life tenure meant something different in Jefferson's time than ours because people died in their 40s and 50s. Today, if someone's appointed to the Supreme Court at 35, let's say, that person could live 70 more years. And this is not democratic. You know, by any standard, one person should not outlive a generation in public service. And so they didn't set term limits, but we are free to do so. The Constitution does not say anything about this. So we could say that there is a term limit of 18 years or 7 years or 23 years. But I do personally think, as a lifelong Jeffersonian, that we should not have people who serve for 50, 60, 70 years, and that there should be more rotation in the judicial branch, particularly in the Supreme Court, than there is. And obviously, the people on the Supreme Court who are the epitome of ethical legal standards in the United States should have an ethics code enforceable so that no Supreme Court justice ever even gives the appearance of being biased. You know, I'm out here in the country, John, with my Airstream. I keep wanting to run into Clarence Thomas. I thought we could maybe do a barbecue, a few wieners together, you know?
Well, I think maybe the idea has been, at least, that of course they're above reproach. They're Supreme Court justices. They will comport themselves in a way that would not require an ethics code, and that maybe has worked for a couple hundred years, but it just doesn't seem to be getting the job done now, does it?
No, and just a couple of things about this. you know, you would think that these individuals would hold themselves to the highest possible ethical standards, that even the slightest appearance of conflict of interest would offend them, and they would turn away in disgust from someone who offered them a free trip or to buy their mother's home or to take them to Scotland to golf at St. Andrews or to go on a luxury yacht into Russia. That's just something that no Supreme Court justice should ever do. And I'm not even so concerned about their lining their pockets, but it means that you and I, the citizens, the people listening to us right now, John, can't count on the Supreme Court with its unbelievable power to act in the interest of all the American people. In fact, they appear sometimes to be acting in their own personal self-interest. And just to close this, Jefferson said, yes, every society needs guardians, but who will guard us against our guardians? Who's above the Supreme Court that can make them behave like ethical human beings? And, of course, the answer is there is nothing.
Yeah. And outside, as you said, they're lining their pockets, whatever that means. And it has happened on both sides, although most egregiously of late.
Of course.
Clarence Thomas. But I am interested in recusal. You would almost wish that the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court should tap somebody on the shoulder and say, I know you want to handle this one, too, but I'm mandating, give somebody the power to say you can't judge on this because you're compromised, or the appearance of compromise is so overwhelming that it will taint whatever we decide. There's no mechanism for that either.
No, we agree on this, John. We usually agree on almost everything except your desire to be America's king. But I do think that this is very important. I think that the Congress should pass an ethics law, enforceable with criminal penalties, and that they should also appoint a Supreme Court ombudsman. And that person would look at every case that comes, and then that person would go to the justice who might possibly have a conflict of interest and tap her or him on the shoulder and say, I'm sorry, you're out on this one. And that person should be independent of the court so that the American people have someone there to protect us from naked self-dealing or helping one's cronies or being in bed with big oil or big business or big railroads. Both Roosevelt and Jefferson would agree on this. In fact, Roosevelt, of course, is the trust buster. And now we have some members of the Supreme Court of the United States who appear to be doing the business for the most privileged interests in the United States. And that's absolutely not the American ideal.
You know, one last thing, though. I wonder if we would be having this conversation if the politics were different. This seems to animate the president and Democrats, but they didn't seem to mind it when they were in control of the Supreme Court and the White House. You know, I can understand how people would listen to this highfalutin talk we're doing and saying, oh, sure, you guys want to jigger the Supreme Court now.
Let me give you a for instance, and this is a counter argument to those people who are listening, who might be thinking, oh, they're just liberals talking today. Abe Fortas was a justice of the Supreme Court during the 1960s. Yeah, LBJ was his friend. When it was determined that Abe Fortas took several emoluments of about $20,000 each from somebody who might have business before the court, he was forced to resign. LBJ said, you've got to go. You're my friend. We can't have this. This is not what the Supreme Court needs to be. Yes, there has been peculation and there's been corruption throughout human history, and the Democrats don't have a particular monopoly on virtue. No. But if you look back, there was a time when it was shameful to take a bribe, shameful to take a trip at somebody else's expense, and no longer that shame exists. And when that shame goes, corruption abounds. And so if they won't self-police, John, we're going to have to police them. And I'm really sorry to see this as a partisan issue where the Democrats now appear to want to have a conflict of interest code and the Republicans resist it. The Republicans should be right with the Democrats on this, and what they should say, this has to apply to everybody, no matter which president appointed that person.
Right. I mean, because neither side is probably so delusional as to think they'll always control the White House and always control the picks. Everybody in the long run, maybe not the short term, but everybody in the long run would benefit from a Supreme Court that we have more confidence in. And I would add a Supreme Court with term limits. This is a conversation you and I will have another day, both on stage and maybe over a couple of cocktails. But in the meantime, we're looking forward to Teddy Roosevelt appearing. And as you know, Clay, one of the things we're going to do when Teddy Roosevelt arrives at the Tivoli Theater in Downers Grove the first Saturday in November. Tickets aren't on sale yet, but circle that on the calendar. Our friend Steve Bertrand's going to interview you and me on stage about the 25-year journey you and I have had exploring these presidencies. That'll be a lot of fun.
Well, I want to bring my therapist with me if I can. Now, John, if we're going to have alcoholic beverages,
yeah,
that'll have to be when I'm out of character, because Theodore Roosevelt is a sarsaparilla man.
I know
he does not drink alcohol. He is offended by the idea that he was ever drunk publicly. In fact, one of his friends testified on his behalf and said, of course he's not drunk. He just acts like a drunk.
That's Clay Jenkinson, and you can follow his travels, his writings, and videos, listeningtoamerica.org. I'll see you on stage in a few months.
I love you, my friend. Hello, Ottawa.
He came to my house out there and said, where are we? Iowa?